If you'd like to receive this podcast early and without ads, consider becoming a member of the DSR Network. Listeners to this show can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience and early access, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our episodes via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for select podcasts, and an invitation to join the DSR Slack community. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code DSRDAILY at checkout to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code DSRDAILY. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, March 23rd, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the podcast. It's the DSR Daily, and today I, David Rothkopf, am here with Chris Kottner. Riley Fessler is still working off the effects of St. Patrick's Day, I guess, but I think Chris and I can handle it. Are you up to it ready today, Chris?
I am indeed.
Okay, well, what's your top story for today?
President Vladimir Putin secured a record post-Soviet landslide victory in Russia's recent so-called election.
A landslide,
receiving 87.8% of the vote. This is shocking, David. I mean, I woke up this morning and I could not believe that the guy who implemented a law that said he could serve for two more six-year terms was actually elected to the office. What a big surprise.
It's a big surprise. I don't know if you would say he's actually elected. What I always love is, you're like a dictator and you're like fix the elections. And so you're going to win, right? And you're just going to dictate the terms. And somebody goes, you know what, boss? I think 87.8% of the, I think that sounds legit.
Yes, exactly.
it's like, really? That, what are you doing? Like, why are you even pretending? Why aren't you pretending? You want to make it sound like it was 87.8 sounds like real. It doesn't sound real to me.
Oh, but wait, it gets better. During his victory speech, he emphasized Russia's unity and resilience, dismissing the impact of domestic protests, which there were. And I saw videos of people pouring various types of liquids into ballot boxes. I'm sure they're not alive today.
They're no longer with us. Yeah. And, some leaders, like about a dozen countries, have, offered him, quote, congratulations. And all those countries, are the ones you would expect, except India. Narendra Modi, said, congratulations, Vladimir, we look forward to working with you. I'm sure there'll be more of that later today, and there'll be more controversy. Remember the famous do not congratulate line that Trump ignored once. It'll be interesting to see what Trump thinks of all this, because that's the kind of election return he would like to see. We'll follow that. What else have you got?
Well, I'm going to stick with dictators, actually. It wasn't going to be my second story, but it makes sense to kind of put it second. Former President Donald Trump is reportedly planning... I can't even get through it. Our old buddy, Paul Manafort, pardoned as a campaign advisor for the 2024 election, particularly focusing on the Republican convention and potential fundraising. In addition to Mr. Trump hiring Paul Manafort, he gave I don't even know what to call it, a speech at a rally in Ohio, where he essentially predicted a bloodbath if he wasn't elected. And while it seemingly was referring to auto workers, people read into it that it would be a bloodbath. And guess what, ladies and gentlemen? It's going to be a bloodbath if the guy gets elected. And finally, I spent my Sunday morning with our friend Greg Sargent and his guest Susan Glasser talking about this very subject. Susan had written an article about a previous rally and, you know, was called on to ABC News to talk about her article and as well as the rally in Ohio. So lots going on in Trump land and not anything good.
Yeah. You know, again, I'm glad people are out there writing about this and paying attention to it. But so far, at each of these rallies, nothing Trump says is surprising. What's more surprising to me is that when Trump's vice president on Friday, Mike Pence, said, "I'm not going to endorse him," most major newspapers didn't really cover the story as if it were a big story. It's a big story, right? The vice president, most of his cabinet said they wouldn't endorse him. When Trump says, you know, there's going to be a bloodbath, that's a little bit like Putin saying, you know, he won the election. I mean, Trump uses violence and uses violent language, and that's part of who Trump is. But he's going to lose, so we don't have to worry about it. I hope he's going to lose, or Deep State Radio is going to have to start being done from a pirate radio station off the coast of the United States. I hope you're ready for that. We're all going to have to move onto a boat and just bob in the now. What's your next story?
My next story is on Israel, and we missed you on Friday, so I'm also interested in your thoughts on Chuck Schumer's speech regarding Israel. But the latest is Israeli troops conducted a raid on the Al-Shifa hospital in Gaza, claiming it was used by Hamas leaders, leading to casualties and significant fire. Reports from residents in the Hamas-led or the Hamas-run health ministry indicated intense military activity with people trapped and suffering due to the fire. This once again seems like Israel using the excuse of Hamas hiding in hospitals, and not that they're not. But, you know, these operations are not having the intended impact of capturing and killing Hamas leaders. It's having the impact of killing innocent civilians, of which people who are in the hospital being treated for illnesses and injuries are being targeted. With that said, you know, I'd like to get your thoughts on Senator Schumer's speech on Israel, since we missed you on Friday.
Well, that was a good speech. It was the right thing to say. It's a sign that things are changing within the sort of core support that Israel has had for a long time. Of course, Prime Minister Netanyahu responded to it, as you might predict, by saying this is an inappropriate speech to give. You know, friends don't mess in each other's domestic politics. Ludicrous coming from Netanyahu, who 9 years ago came to the United States and addressed the United States Congress without the invitation of the then President Barack Obama, and who has been actively involved in politics ever since. And indeed, over this weekend, Netanyahu said that he was going to hang on until November because then he knew he would have a blank check from Donald Trump. So all of you out there are thinking, well, I don't like the policies of Joe Biden, and so I'm not going to vote for him. Netanyahu, the author of the disasters in terms of the response to October 7th, you know, he wants Trump so that he can do worse. Things in that part of the world, things about, you know, finding solution, not looking good this Monday. What else do you got?
Sorry, I just have one more question. How far can the United States go here in terms of, you know, I guess beyond diplomacy? Is there anything that can be done?
Well, I mean, there are a lot of things that could theoretically be done, but you know, the United States could say we're not going to provide any more offensive weapons. That's what the president has implied. He said he would continue to supply defensive weapons. Of course, the United States could say we're not going to supply any more weapons. The United States could not dance around its response to what Netanyahu says. The United States could just come out and say, we demand a ceasefire now. That's our new policy. We do not support what Israel is doing. The United States could change its policy within international institutions, where it has been defending Israel and using its veto to defend Israel, for example, within the United Nations Security Council. The United States could say, no, we're going to line up with the international community. And that could go as far as, agreeing with others that there should be an international force in Gaza to be the peacekeepers, that the Israelis should not be the peacekeepers. So on. So, I mean, the U.S. could put itself, well beyond where it is right now. And frankly, it should. The policy is not working, as you say. While some Hamas have been killed, and the number is up to dispute, the devastation in Gaza is certain to produce even more extremists. It's certain to make Israel even less secure. And of course, it's a humanitarian catastrophe, and one that could have been avoided, because Israel could be flooding Gaza with food, could be keeping corridors open, could have more land corridors open. Final point is, this temporary port that the United States is talking about setting up, and there's still some big questions about how that would be done, and it could take a while. That's not going to be a really effective way to push in a lot of aid. The most effective way to push in a lot of aid is through the land entrances into Gaza. That requires the cooperation of Israel. And that's not coming thus far. So, there's a lot to be done, but it's very clear that Joe Biden, Bibi Netanyahu are not on anything like the same page.
Thanks. Haiti, the situation continues to deteriorate. The United States State Department sent a charter flight to Haiti to evacuate 30 American citizens, brought them to Miami, fleeing the severe gang violence that is currently destabilizing Haiti. Secretary of State Antony Blinken spoke about the situation in Haiti, stating that most members of Haiti's Political Transition Council have been nominated, with a few pending. And the idea after the council is confirmed is that Ariel Henry will step down as prime minister. I'm not exactly sure, whether stability follows after that or not. But it seems, again, like a pretty dire situation in Haiti with gangs essentially running the country at this point.
Haiti has deteriorated into a position where most of the solutions that are out there are not actually solutions. They're band-aids. This is a country that desperately needs new leadership and a real commitment from the international community, one that's the international community has not followed through on. There are still many in the U.S. that worry that, if the situation deteriorates further, that you could get back into a refugee problem with Haiti going to the United States, which we've seen in the past. That's something that would be real difficult given the current mood on immigration in the United States. Let me say before we go, one other thing, one other story, a point of direction. A couple days ago, the United Nations made an appeal that the warring sides in Sudan stop. Right now, it says 5 million people are at risk of starvation there, which is 10 times the number who are at risk of starvation in Gaza. I'm not minimizing the problem in Gaza. I'm trying to put the situation in Sudan in some sort of perspective. And the number could be 4 times that, could be 18, 19, 20 million people. These stories, and one of the reasons we pick up on Haiti or we pick up on what's going on in Africa, as we do, is they're hugely consequential. They have gigantic human costs, and the world is just very often not paying attention. But we will here, and we will try to keep tracking other things. We have above average intelligence show coming a little bit later today. We've got this Daily Blast episode that Chris mentioned with Susan Glasser of The New Yorker, looking at the Trump speech in some more depth. And we've got stuff each and every day. Now we have a book show tomorrow. We've got on Wednesday our foreign policy show, on Thursday a couple of shows on politics. On Friday, We're All Gonna Die Radio will be back, and we've got a couple new shows coming soon. So follow the space, and we will be back with you tomorrow. Until then, thanks, Chris, and thanks, everybody. Bye-bye.